Welcome to Dracena Wines Podcast. Our wines plus your moments equals great memories. I'm your host, Lori, and this is a podcast about all things wine. So hey, everybody. Today I'm going to be talking about the alphabet game of wine. And this is kind of a fun little look at a very educationally thick concept in wine, the appellation systems and how to read wine labels from different countries. So why the alphabet game of wine? Well, the appellations are all abbreviated, or I should say the appellation systems are all abbreviated with letters. So AOC, DOC, AVA, things like that. And when I read these letters, what I'm thinking to myself is, this is an alphabet game. It's like when you were a kid and you were in the way back of your car and you were on a family vacation, dreading the long ride, and, you know, mom, dad, somebody said, okay, let's make the time fly by, we are going to play the alphabet game. You know, that wonderfully not game of, there's the letter A on the license plate. Okay, Jimmy, it's your turn to find the letter B. Sarah, it's your turn to find the letter C. Okay. Well, I never really thought that was much fun. But honestly, the alphabet game of wine, I find a lot more entertaining. So what is an appellation? Okay, appellations are actually indicators that the country and region in which a grape is grown. So in addition, by claiming an appellation, it means that the winemaker is following laws and regulations dictated by the government for that specific wine. So if you actually have a knowledge base of the appellations, it is actually extremely helpful for you if you are hunting to find a new wine that you are going to fall in love with. The appellations actually provide you with invaluable information. It tells you where the wine came from, and it also gives you a glimpse of how the grapes were grown and possibly its quality. And that right there is a very important fact. It is only possibly telling you about the quality. Now, where did this system all come from? Okay. Everybody thinks, knows, whatever, states that it's from the French, that the wine appellation system came from the French. Well, that's sort of kind of true. It actually did come from the French. They were the first to institute the concept of appellations, but the interesting thing is it wasn't for wine. It was actually the first appellation, the first AOC, Appellation d'Origine Contrôlée, designation was actually way, way, way back in 1411, but it wasn't for wine. It was for Roquefort cheese. How's that? So the first classification system was all for cheese. It wasn't until the late 1800s that their regulation of wine was implemented. The concept floated around, changed a bit from time to time, until about 1919, when the law of the protection of the place of origin was enacted and became what is now the basis of the modern rules of appellations, which many of the other countries have now adopted some sort of form or a variation of. Italy was also trying to dictate quality appellations, but it wasn't happening until 1716, when the Duke of Tuscany modified old Roman legislation, naming Chianti as the first modern controlled area of production. So this is actually the forefather of Italy's DOC, Denominazione d'Origine Controllata. No changes were made again until 1932, when the Italian government set out to dictate more specific rules for production of grape varietals. So how about us Americans? Well, we were really, really late to the party. But then again, you have to take history into consideration when you say that. We're a new world as opposed to the Europeans' old world. So back in the 1400s, we weren't even a gleam in our mother's eye to being a country. And even back in 1716, when the Duke of Tuscany was doing all of his finagling with making sure the controls over the Chianti region was happening, we were still 60 years out from being a country. So, you know, we have to give ourselves a little slack in that regard. However, once we started with the AVA appellation system, the rules are pretty strict, and I'll get into later, kind of confusing. Now, each country's appellations are governed by that country. So when you're looking at a wine label from Germany is going to look and have different information on it than a wine label from France. And that's because each country deems something different as being the most important aspect of that wine's quality or location. So for example, most European countries, it's the land or the region where you get quality wine, okay? So, you know, you've got Burgundy or you've got Rhone, okay? In Germany, for example, it's not the location that matters. It's actually the ripeness of the grapes at harvest. So the most distinguished classifications, the various grades of Paticus wine, is based on when you pick those grapes, what is that ripeness level? What is that sugar content at harvest? Which is very important because in America, although we pay attention to that Brix level at harvest, it's really people pay attention more to what's the sugar level of the wine at the end product, not at harvest. In Hungary, vineyards were classified into three categories depending on the soil, sun exposure, and the potential to develop a Tritus cinerea, which is noble rot. Here in the good old US of A, our AVAs are federally recognized growing regions that have distinguishable geographic identities. So what's important to point out is that prior to getting into the different country specifics, that the appellation systems control the reputation of a particular space. It does not guarantee quality, okay? What it does guarantee is exclusivity in the marketplace. So I'm going to start off with France, which is pretty much what the majority of all the European countries base their system on. France uses what is called an AOC system, which stands for the Appellation of Controlled Origin. Here, it's the land that matters. So the place's name and the appellation controlling is required on the label. Only about 50% of French wines qualify to be categorized as an AOC. So in terms of production of AOC-registered wines, Languedoc and Roussillon and Southwest Pyrenees produce about 23.1% each, while Provence produces 4.5% of these AOC-registered wines. The top three AOC producers are the Rhone Valley, Bordeaux, and Champagne. And my guess is those are the regions of France that you are familiar with, even if you're not a huge wine fan. If you envision the AOC as a triangle with the less restrictive regulation at the base and the more stringent at the top, you can grasp the concept behind their system. It's pretty straightforward. The thought process is that if you apply more rules and you have smaller areas, that you are increasing the control, and that theoretically leads to better wine, theoretically. At the lowest level, you would see a region designated followed by a sub-region. Then you would have a village and ultimately a vineyard, right? So think about it in terms of you have a state, then you have a county, okay? Then you have a town, and then you have a street. So you can have much more control if all you are paying attention to is that street than if you are trying to pay attention to that whole state. That's the concept behind the AOC system. Okay? The producer is always able to choose to declassify in France. So if I'm on that street and I make a vintage of wine that I'm like, whoa, you know what? This isn't really good. This isn't what I want to be known for. I can declassify it so that I am not harming the name of that region, okay? Which is a pretty important aspect because not all countries are allowed to do that. When you're reading a wine label from France, there's a distinct difference from the United States, where the winery name is the most prominent. So in the United States, you know, you always can look at a label and you know who the winery is. They're very prominent. You know, Dracena Wines is on that front label. You know, if you pick up a bottle of Dracena Wines, that we're the ones who produced that wine. In France, the region is much more important than the producer. So sometimes you don't even know who the producer is. Sometimes it's really tough to track down who physically made that wine. Within the vineyard designation, there are two other sub-designations that are more specific. And these include the bow down, almighty, we are not worthy, grand cru, which only makes up 2% of the wines produced, and the premier cru, which is just one little notch below the grand cru that makes up 10%. So, and village designation wines comprise 38%, while those subregion and regions make up the remaining 50%. Okay, so we're going to move from France over to Italy. Italy's response to the French's AOC is the DOC, Denominazione di Origine Controllata. Based on the AOC, this regulating body determines what varieties can be used, how many wines are made, sugar content, and sometimes even when the grapes can be harvested. There are two main differences between France and Italy's system. First, France bases its categories on good wines, while Italy chooses to base it on typical wines. So that's kind of an important aspect. So France is saying, if you buy this Grand Cru, we're telling you this is a better quality wine than a village wine, okay? Whereas Italy doesn't have that stipulation. Italy says, if you are buying wine from this region of Italy, it should taste like this. And if it does taste like this, we are going to give it this classification, okay? So it's kind of like the AKC, more letters, of the wine world, okay? So if you are a dog aficionado, if you go to an AKC dog show, you have all of the same breeds. So all of the Weimaraners are out there. And the judge is comparing each of those Weimaraners in the ring to a standard that has been written by the AKC and a standard that he or she has in her head. And as they look at each dog, they are mentally saying, okay, check that off, check that off, check that off. This dog is perfect for the standard. Or no, this dog is not perfect for the standard. That's how Italy looks at it, okay? This is what the wine should be from this region, and it either is or it isn't, okay? Secondly, in France, a producer can declassify themselves if a certain vintage is not up to par. Italy doesn't have that. If I'm a producer in a specific DOC, I am guaranteeing that my wine is going to be typical the entire time. I do not have that prerogative to declassify myself. Now, just as France has Grand Cru and Premier Cru, Italy has a stronger or more stringent classified tier called the DOCG, which is a guarantee. This truly dictates quality. Additionally, there are levels of restrictiveness in Italy. Their certifications fall into three categories. So when you're looking at the Italian wine label, you will typically see one of three sets of letters: DOCG, DOC, and IGT, with DOCG being the highest, most premier, and the IGT being the lowest level. If the wine was tested by a committee, so Italian producers have to submit their wines to a committee to ensure the geographic authenticity, it can be labeled as a DOCG. It's an extremely tough classification to be honored with. If the label reads DOC, you are choosing a wine that is most common, right? It's out there, this is what typically is there. Okay? We're not saying it's guaranteed quality. We're just saying that this is the biggest range of typicity that this wine is going to have. Okay? Although these rules are strict, there is more leniency in that categorization of DOC than there is in DOCG. The geographic zone would be bigger, and there would be less stipulations of what grapes can be used. It's just a more relaxed atmosphere in what that wine is. The lowest still classified wine is an IGT, which is an Indicación Geográfica Típica. So this classification kind of came out not so long ago, and it came out because you had either DOCG, DOC, and then the rest is what, Planck? So they had to come up with something where producers who still are making quality wines can stand out from the rest of the Planck. And that's basically what the IGT is. Next up is Germany. The Germans grafted the new system to an already established system based on levels of sugar in the grapes at harvest. So under this new modified system, they created regions named varieties that could be grown and set production limits. But the older system is still in use, and in many places, many ways, it still predominates. The lowest level of wine for Germany is a Tafel wine, which translates to table wine, and roughly equivalent to the French table wine, Italy Italian wine, in that the wine doesn't carry a varietal name or tell where it's from. So you're getting red wine, you're getting white wine. Wines above the Tafel wine are called quality wines and are divided into two categories depending upon whether or not sugar was added after the grapes were harvested. So that's illegal in California. I cannot add sugar to my wine. But that regulation is legal in Germany, and it's also legal in certain parts of the United States depending on the climate. QBA wines, where the Q stands for quality, are named from a region or village and can carry a varietal name, but are capitalized, which is adding the sugar. These wines are often harvested at around 14 to 15 Brix, which is not very high, which is why you need to add the sugar. QMP, which is the quality wine with attribute, generally also carries a regional or village name and varietal designations, but are distinguished from the QBA wines in that QMP wines do not have any sugar added at harvest. The QMP wines are further designated into classes depending upon the level of sugar at harvest, starting at Cabernet wines, moving to Spätlese, Ostlese, and then Baron Ostlese and Trockenbärenlese. Baron means berries, so the Baron Ostlese was selected at berry level, not the cluster level, so that's very different. So somebody is out there picking berry by berry versus cutting off clusters. And then the Trockenbärenlese means dried or shriveled berries. So those are the ones that are very high in sugar because they're infected with the botrytis. So that's the noble rot. So that first wine, Cabernet, is going to be the driest. So if you like dry wine, you're going to look for a Cabernet or a Spätlese. If you like sweet wines, well, Cabernet isn't really going to be your style. You're going to go closer to the Barrenlauslese, or if you really like it, the Trockenbärenlese, okay, that noble rot. So the label itself tells you that sweetness level, whereas with the United States wines and the other regions that don't focus in on that sweetness level, you kind of have to do that reverse math. So how we get alcohol content is by the yeast eating the sugar. So the higher the alcohol content, the lower the sugar is going to be because the yeast have eaten up all of the sugar. So if you are drinking a wine that's 9% alcohol, it's probably going to have more residual sugar in it than if you're drinking an alcohol at 15%. That's going to be considered extremely dry. With the German label, you don't need to do that math. You don't need to figure out where you are or whether or not you like it. You can look at it and see Cabernet. That's dry. Yes, that's my style wine. Okay, so what about here in the United States? Quite honestly, I think our system is the most confusing. The AVA, or American Viticultural System, has so many ins and outs, stipulations, if this, then that, zigs and zags. I think you can earn a master's degree in it. Wines carrying an AVA must contain fruit from at least 85% from that named area. If a geopolitical name is used, such as an area that's got a legal definition, so I'm talking a county, Sonoma County, Napa County, okay, then 75% of the grapes must come from that area. But here's your first zig. Since states can make laws that are more restrictive, that can change. So for example, California, if the state name is used, so if on a wine label it says designated as California, 100% of the grapes must come from California. Oregon has also chosen to make some of its label requirements more restrictive than federal laws. So, but like in Washington, if I claim Washington State, then it's 75% of the fruit has to come from Washington State and 25% can come from Oregon, let's say. So each state can make something more restrictive. It cannot make it less restrictive, but it can make it more restrictive. As for variety is concerned, under federal law, if a producer names a variety on the label, at least 75% of the grapes must be from that variety. So when you pick up a bottle of Dracena Wines Cabernet Franc, our 2015 is 100% Cabernet Franc, but our 2014 was 90% Cabernet Franc, 10% Petite Sirah. We are still allowed to call it Cabernet Franc because it was more than the 75% Cabernet Franc. So even when you are thinking you are drinking a varietal wine, the odds are it is a blended wine, but just under governmental laws, it is allowed to be called a variety. Now, in addition to the labels, laws of variety, there's labels about what you can say depending on how that wine was produced. So when you look at typically the back of the bottle, the back label, there's produced and bottled by, there's made and bottled by, cellared and bottled by, and the odds are you probably never even really paid attention to that. But depending on what is written on that label, that also is giving you a hint, or not a hint, it's telling you exactly how that wine was produced. Again, no correlation to quality. None of those three terms represent the quality of the wine. It just tells you how that wine was made. So, for example, produced and bottled by. According to the TTB, which regulates and approves labels, produced and bottled by means that a minimum of 75% of grapes were fermented and bottled by the winery at the stated address on the label and on the license. Now, it doesn't mean that the winery grew the grapes themselves. That would be a state. Okay? Made and bottled by, or vinted and bottled by, indicates that a minimum of 10% of the wine was fermented at the winery address, and the barrels were actually stored at the address. So it's really important where those barrels are, okay? As the wine is turning into wine, fermenting and sitting and aging, where they are, okay? Finally, cellared and bottled by means that the winery that is selling the wine has crushed their grapes at one location, but has stored their barrels at another location. And again, that doesn't mean that it's good or bad, right? You could have somebody else produce the wine, and then I bottle it under my own label, and it's phenomenal wine. You can also have a winery that is estate grown, so they're watching those grapes from the vine to the bottle, so it's estate grown, bottled, produced and bottled by, and the wine be bad. So again, these things are legal, but they don't represent quality. And what's even more intriguing with how the numbers on bottles are represented is that if a label claims to be a specific vineyard, so we are coming out with a Plummer Vineyard Cabernet Franc for 2016, that is saying that at least 95% of the fruit that makes up the wine in that bottle has physically come from Plummer Vineyard. Okay, that makes sense. But vintage date does not mean 100% from that vintage. So if an AVA appears on the label, the wine must be at least 95% from that named vintage. But if a geopolitical, that state again, description is used, only 85% of that wine needs to come from that vintage. So why would somebody combine vintages? So wine ages, right? And it's more, for lack of a better word, harsh as it's younger, right? That's why we lie it down and let it age. So if you have a 2015 wine, you can kind of give it a little extra zip if you add a little bit of 2016. So that is extremely, extremely common. But there is regulations depending on what you are putting on that label. So if I'm just claiming an AVA, then it needs to be 95%. But if I'm claiming a larger region, then it needs to be 85%. Am I right or am I right? Is that confusing or not? And the last thing about our AVA system is at no point does our system regulate anything about wine quality. You may have your own opinions that this region is better than this region, but that's your palate. There's no governmental regulation that says if you look at this label, it's going to be a superior wine than this label has. So the defining characteristic of an AVA is that it is geographically distinct. It is a recognizable name that has no hierarchy significance. There's no size limitations. It can be as big or as small. All that matters is that the government has declared that this region is geographically different. It's got a different soil type. It's got a different microclimate. It's got something different. Doesn't depend on how big it is or how small it is. In fact, Cole Ranch, which is located in Mendocino County, California, is an AVA, and it is only 150 acres big. So there you have it. There's my introduction into the alphabet game of wine. And I'm saying introduction because obviously there are just so many more appellations out there that can be discussed. You've got Greece, Portugal, Spain, just to name a few. And if I talked about all of the appellations, this podcast would be like hours and hours and hours long. So my suggestion, go out, learn, explore. If you can get on a plane and explore the regions in real life, woohoo! I'm more than willing to be a tag along, okay? But if you're like me and you can't really afford or have the time off to travel as much, you can just go and experience the world one sip at a time, go into that wine shop, choose a country of the day, pick a bottle, experience that bottle, sip it, swirl it, savor it, and enjoy the world one label at a time. Thanks for listening to Dracena Wines Podcast. If you have suggestions of what topics you would like us to discuss, please reach out to us on social media or at dracenawines@gmail.com. If you liked our podcast, please subscribe at iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting program you use. To easily subscribe at iTunes, please go to bit.ly/DracinaPodcast. That's bit.ly/D for Dracina and P for podcast. We would greatly appreciate you leaving a review on your favorite system. It helps others to find us. Let's get social. Find us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat, Pinterest, YouTube, Google+, and Periscope at Dracina Wines. And I am on LinkedIn as Lori Hoyt Budd. Check out our award-winning wine at DracinaWines.com. And remember to always pursue your passion. Sláinte.